This edition of The Wellness Prescription is brought to you by Healthy Planet, your source to healthy living.
Welcome, everyone. This is The Wellness Prescription on 105.9 The Region. I'm Dr. Claudia. Thank you for joining me today. Is anxiety the new pandemic? Can an individual heal from anxiety? And how does an individual cope with it? These are the questions we will cover in this segment with our very special guest, Dr. David Ross Marin, PhD and Harvard psychologist, and of course, founder of the Center for Anxiety. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. It's so good to see you again.
Yeah, I love having you on the show. And I also think that we always have a very important conversation around anxiety. And I love the fact that you have a book, Thriving with Anxiety, because I feel like that's what we need to learn to do. So let's just jump right in and let's talk about it. When it comes to anxiety, what are the main triggers in a person's life that they may experience anxiety from?
There's so many today. The primary trigger for our anxiety, I believe, is anxiety itself. And the reason is because we're allergic to it. We think of it as a disease. The minute we start to feel anxious, we think something's wrong with me. I shouldn't be feeling this way. That perception leads to us having more adrenaline going through our veins, which leads to more anxiety. So it's the perception that anxiety is a problem that actually creates this cascade of symptoms and makes things out of control. In areas of the world where it's okay to feel anxiety, we do not have an anxiety epidemic. This is a specific culture-bound phenomenon that's occurring within Western countries, especially the United States and Canada, where we have this perception that we have to feel happy, we have to feel good all the time, we're not supposed to feel tense, something's wrong with me, something's wrong with my body. And all that chatter actually has a physiological effect of increasing and pumping up our anxiety day to day.
Anxiety is natural. It's normal, and it can do good for us. It can propel us forward and help us accomplish certain things. And the idea of anxiety is, I think what I completely agree with you, is what stresses us out, because we don't think we're supposed to have any anxiety. We're living in a time where we're trying to eliminate anxiety and the symptoms, and we're not accepting it as a part of our daily lives and some of the things that we have to deal with. But you believe that if we can access that anxiety and use it to grow ourselves spiritually, this is where we can put it to good use.
Yes. So the spiritual piece of it is prominent in my book. It's the last third of the book. But, you know, let's talk about spirituality and mental health more broadly, maybe as a first foray into getting into that topic. I grew up in Canada. I did much of my mental health training in Canada. It just wasn't part of the conversation with my advisors, with my mentors, in the academy. When I came to the United States for graduate school and then eventually for fellowship and now my faculty position, there was a little bit, not hugely, but there was a noticeable increase in the amount that this topic was discussed. I think the reason is because many patients, individuals, and this is true in Canada as well, but certainly more in the United States, want to speak about mental health in spiritual terms. And that might sound shocking to people who are in the mental health sciences or people who are in mental health professions, but I kid you not, when I sampled our patients in Eastern Massachusetts, right, that one of the least religious states in the areas of the entire United States of America, we found that nearly 60% of our patients had a significant want to speak with their clinicians about spiritual matters. Furthermore, 80% of the patients were using spirituality or religion in some way to cope with their distress. And if you look at the most widely utilized mental health treatments on planet Earth today, it's a spiritually based treatment called Alcoholics Anonymous or other 12-step programs. By far, the most widely utilized mental health treatments on planet Earth today have a spiritual bent to them. So there's this huge chasm between the academy on the one side and the general public. And by the way, this is true in Canada as well. It's just that the academy is even more disconnected from these aspects of human identity and human life. So when I started doing this research at the Harvard Medical School 15 years ago, it started turning heads and eventually became mainstream. In our hospital today, McLean Hospital, which is a flagship psychiatric teaching facility in the area, we offer spirituality and cognitive behavior therapy groups to thousands of patients on an annual basis, and spiritual care as well as being provided by chaplains because of this research. So when we talk about spirituality and mental health, I want to make it really clear. This is not something like way out there. You know, we're talking about the real lives of real individuals who are struggling with issues like anxiety and depression and substance abuse and all sorts of other concerns that are presenting and want to have this as a part of the conversation. So when I spoke with HarperCollins and they wanted me, when I would like, do you want this? I asked them, do you want spirituality to be part of the book? And they're like, yes, it must be part of the book. Please include this. This is what's going on in the hearts and minds of people.
Health is whole. It's like body, mind, and spirit. And what I do is really no different and not that far disconnected from what you do and from what other healthcare providers do. We really have to try to connect our bodies and our minds to our spirituality. So that's why I thought this was going to be a great conversation. Because when we have a connection to spirit, or a spiritual practice, then we are able to understand that anxiety is not something that's meant to stay there forever. It's something to trigger some sort of action on your part, on the part of the human who's experiencing it. Is that right?
Okay, Dr. Claudia, I love what you just said. I think it's exactly the message that, you know, if you take a materialistic, biological, medical approach to anxiety, then it is a problem that needs to be eliminated, and we are going to use pharmacological or behavioral or social, whatever it is, means to eliminate anxiety from our experience. That's what the field is doing. That's what is in the news. That's what the media, that's what we're sharing with our children in schools, that these are anxiety diseases or disorders, that these are problematic. I grew up in a religious environment. I'm still a member of a religious community, and I never got that message. I got the message that if people are struggling with stress, with emotional pain, maybe it's something they're going through. Maybe it's actually could be a catalyst for positive change in their life. Maybe they're moving in the right direction. They just have to go through a period of pain, a period of, you know, the crucible that has to warm up and it's hard and it's hot and it's uncomfortable. But that's a curing process in many ways, in many cases, I should say, towards becoming more solid, becoming more centered, becoming more connected with other people and with our spirituality. And if we view anxiety through that lens, it just flips everything on its head. The anxiety actually becomes an opportunity to grow spiritually as opposed to an impediment to our emotional and material lives. It's a completely different frame.
It's a completely different way of looking at it because we're not diagnosing a problem, we're solving a problem. And I want to use an example of, you know, something that happens in our daily lives. So the way I try to explain it to my patients, to my own family for that matter, is, you know, every stage in your life is needing, warranting, and all about change. I mean, from, you know, toddler, from to infant, you learn to walk. It's stressful in its own way. Then you learn to go to school. Then you learn to ride a bike. So there's so many changes that are happening in our lives. And as you get older, you're more aware of how it affects you. So for example, I have a teenager who's going to be, you know, likely moving away to university. Exciting, stressful, you know, but we're not making it, oh my God, you're moving away. We're trying to change the dialogue to say, okay, when you're going to make a decision, you're going to make a decision that's going to help you in your future. This is life change. This is amazing. You know, it's going to be a transition. So I also feel like changing the dialogue and bringing in that spiritual component will help people cope with the things that are just part of everyday living.
I certainly think it can. And I think many people want to have those conversations. Not everyone, by the way. Some people, you know, might look at this topic and say it's not for me, and that's fine. I think there are many ways that anxiety can also enhance our connection with ourselves and with others without having a spiritual component. But so many people do want to have this discussion. You know, one of the things, I'm just thinking about your kid going off to college or university, as it's called in Canada. You know, how, imagine that he or she, by the way.
He.
Okay. So imagine that he's arriving on college campus and like feeling alone, feeling nervous about classes and finding books in the library and where to go and dining halls and dorms and all sorts of new people and new faces. And it's overwhelming, you know, going from a high school with how many people? 1,000?
Yep.
Yeah. To all of a sudden a major Canadian university, I imagine, which has probably 40,000 people.
Yep.
Could be.
Roughly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a huge change and a massive transition. And thinking, wow, I am on a path that I should be on. This is going to enhance my life. This is a meaningful journey. This is step one, and it's going to be hard.
Right.
Isn't that a very positive frame for our anxiety? And in fact, the fact that I'm experiencing this difficulty right now means that I'm taking steps towards my future. This has meaning. This has purpose.
Yeah. And that's how I feel like I want to approach those types of stressful events in my life that might make me feel anxious, because I'm not immune to it. And I'm sure you're not immune to anxiety.
No, I've got plenty of anxiety. And often there's really good reason for that. I'm facing a lot of huge, you know, stressors or massive stuff's happening in my life. And there's also just the vicissitudes of existence. I mean, we're, you know, none of us are impervious to this. Yeah, I got plenty of anxiety. We're in good, you know, you're in good company.
Good company with the anxiety. I think the difference for me that I've learned over the years is I do have a strong spiritual practice, but I also understand what I consider, and you can correct me if my terminology, if you would rather I use a different terminology, if it's good anxiety or bad anxiety, or is there no difference? Should we just address it as an anxiety event?
You could say it that way. I don't think it's inaccurate. At the same time, I think it's more how we perceive the anxiety that we are experiencing that makes it helpful or something that takes us away from what we need to do. I've seen patients, acute psychiatric patients with extremely high levels of anxiety who cannot function day to day. Hard for them to even get out of bed in a psychiatric ward with tons of supports. But they're transitioning from medications. They're going through a major psychosocial crisis. They, you know, might have just lost their jobs or their companies or just gone through a divorce. They might have just moved here from a different sort of, I've seen people come from, you know, refugees, and they're experiencing very high stress for a very good reason. And if they perceive it that way, even though it's clinically bad anxiety, if they perceive it in that way, there's actually, it can enhance our acceptance of ourselves, our self-compassion. And if it's seen to have a meaning and a purpose, I think it can enhance our spiritual connection as well. That's sort of the way we can shift any level of anxiety into something positive through the way that we interact with it.
And so let's define the spiritual part of it. Let's define it for listeners, because spirituality can mean so many different things for so many different people. It, you know, you don't need to belong to a particular religious group to be spiritual. So let's define what you refer to as the spiritual component of, you know, helping deal with anxiety.
So I talk about it in my book, and any aspect of life that has perceived to have a sacred component, something which is greater than the physical world, not just material, not just corporeal, something which is anything greater than that. It could be a greater sense of meaning, a greater sense of purpose, a greater sense of connection to something. For many people, it's God or a higher power, as they might call it. For some people, it's not. It's a sense of connection with previous generations, with the future of humanity, with what's my place in this world, in this universe? Why am I here? These larger questions that I think we all ask or at least think about from time to time. Some of us more than others, and some of us have religious traditions that actually address them more explicitly within a cultural context. I'm fortunate to be one of such people, but not everybody does. And either way, dealing with these larger non-material questions is a spiritual pursuit.
I agree with that. When we come back, more from Dr. Ross Marin on how we can use anxiety to be a catalyst for spiritual growth. This is the Wellness Prescription on 105.9 The Region. Stay with us.
Have a question for Dr. Claudia? Call us at 416-335-1059. Tweet us at 1059 The Region or email us info@1059theregion.com. The Wellness Prescription with Dr. Claudia on 105.9 The Region.
You're listening to 105.9 The Region. Welcome back to The Wellness Prescription. Before the break, Dr. Ross Marin helped us understand anxiety. We also discussed how we can use anxiety as a catalyst for our spiritual growth. And Dr. Ross Marin, I love how you commented about how, you know, the definition of what we feel spirituality is. so many different definitions. I think one of the things that I like to address is, what is our purpose? I feel like if we all try to understand or try to find a purpose in our lives, or what purpose we are serving on this planet, I think it'll help us better understand why we're experiencing certain things on the human plane, why we are here having those human anxious experiences. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I couldn't agree more. I'll give you a very simple analogy. Do you work out at a gym?
I don't work out at a gym, but I do work out.
You work out. Sorry. Okay, fine. So is it comfortable?
It's comfortable when I'm done.
Comfortable when you're done. Right. There's the contrast. And the reason is because of the contrast between sweating, getting your cardiovascular system moving, having the burn of muscles or whatever you're doing, whether it's, you know, strength work or cardiovascular. I'm a distance runner. So for me, I'm all about the cardio. But it's painful. It's uncomfortable. But I know that it serves a purpose. I know that I'm doing it for a reason. Whatever my reason is, whatever your reason is, people who work out know that they're building strength, building resilience, becoming, you know, more adept at certain things. They're having more mastery over their body. They're working on their, you know, kinesiology, whatever it is that they're doing, they're bringing out a certain potential in the world. And that's why we're able to manage, not just manage, but actually embrace and run towards that discomfort.
And we can apply that to anything. It's like, why do we eat healthy? Why do we, you know, why do we do all these things and that are sometimes not exactly enjoyable, but we do them because we're trying to get to a better place in our lives, in our personal lives, in our physical health. So that's a really good way of describing it.
But when it comes to anxiety or mental health in our society, if we're experiencing emotional distress, anxiety, sadness, emotional pain en route to achieving something, what do we perceive that as, right? I'm a failure.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be doing this. It's wrong. My feelings are so intense. Obviously, I'm on the wrong path. No, no, no. If you are achieving something monumental in this world, I promise you it is going to be uncomfortable.
And I feel like that is the key phrase right there. Achieving something monumental in your own life.
It's gonna be painful. It's gonna be uncomfortable. You know, to paraphrase and adapt, my colleague Susan David at McLean, who's at McLean Hospital with me, anxiety is the price of admission to a meaningful life.
Love that. Let's say that again. Anxiety is
the price of admission to a meaningful life.
And that's the essence right there. We all deserve to have a meaningful life, but it doesn't mean that it's going to always be easy and it's always going to just show up at your door. You kind of have to seek it out.
I would say stronger. It means that it is going to be uncomfortable at certain points. I promise. Okay. If you're achieving something meaningful in this world, you will bump up against the anxiety. You're going to experience it. I'm actually nervous when my patients aren't anxious.
Right?
Right. There's a couple of things. Either they're coasting, in which case they're eventually going to fall, or they have substance abuse problems, or they're hopelessly narcissistic or dead.
Okay. Okay.
Like, something's wrong. If you're not getting amped up, if your adrenaline isn't flowing, then you're not facing adversity. If you're not facing adversity, you're not achieving anything monumental, which really means something to you. The fact that it means something to you is what makes it nervous. That's what makes it anxiety provoking. It's you can't escape that.
That's why I enjoy your book so much. And I'll be honest with you, I refer back to it often. In my own practice, I deal with a lot of, I treat a lot of women, and I feel there's a certain age where we become more aware of our anxiety. There's so many factors involved. It could be hormonal. It could be, you know, the empty nesting scenario. But I refer back to your book often because what I like about your book is you're not trying to get rid of the anxiety. You're trying to empower us to reach our full potential because of it. And I think that's key. And that there is monumental. Now, in your book, the last third of it is all about the spiritual component, the spirituality. Let's say you are with a patient who has never considered the whole spiritual component of how we can use anxiety to propel us and to reach our potential. How would you address that?
So, I've spoken to lots of clinicians about how to do this, and clinician education is a huge part of my portfolio within the Harvard Medical School system in psychiatry. I typically ask my patients, and I encourage clinicians to ask their patients, is spirituality part of your life? And if so, how is it relevant to your mental health? Is it something that gives you a resource? Is it something that makes it harder? For some people, many people have spiritual struggles. It's not all fun and games, spirituality. Let me make that very clear. And if so, there's a conversation about, is it helpful? Does it get in the way? Often when speaking about the matter of anxiety, there's a topic that comes up if patients want to discuss it, which is about 60% of the time. So not everyone, but a lot, which is the topic of uncertainty and uncontrollability and the limits of human capacity, the limits of our knowledge, the limits of our control as humans. And this is an area that often the conversation goes towards when they're feeling anxious.
And that's I think about that, and I think about, like, I'm no different than my patients, your patients, yeah. And you're right. It's about the lack of that.
So there's, well, I right? like what you said, there's that lack of control. And often in our society, we don't think about that as a good thing, to acknowledge and to accept our lack of control and our knowledge, our lack of knowledge and control. Like, we need to be in control all the time and to be in the know all the time.
Yeah, but it's also like knowing that sometimes, I don't know, the way I try to view it is sometimes I need to just accept what's happening in the moment is sometimes out of my control, but usually always for my highest good. Does that make sense?
I couldn't agree with you more, but getting there is, it's so key in order to deal with our anxiety. Like, can we actually let go and say, like, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen next. And there's a certain anxiety that brings up, like, I'm not in control. And then all of a sudden, when you're actually like willingly say, I'm not in control and that's okay, there's such a calm that settles in.
Oh, and I don't want any of my listeners to think that I have it under control every single moment of the day.
Well, I don't.
Right?
I see? Definitely don't.
But there are moments where I think to myself, okay, it's not something I can change at this very moment. So how am I going to accept it? And I'll give you an example. Just this morning, trying to do my radio stuff and recording, I was having technical difficulties. And of course, the anxiety is rising, right? I feel the blood pressure. And then I sit back consciously thinking, how can I be in control of this? How can I cope with this? You know what? And then when you start to calm down, you start to realize, you know what? The world is not falling around me. There is a solution to every problem.
And sometimes your phone's not going to work. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, we have these predictions for everything these days, right? The weather, sports outcomes, political elections, what else? Flu epidemics here. It's like this: here's the base rate of the flu, and here's what's going to be tomorrow. And I roll my eyes at these things because they're almost always wrong. So why do we always look at predictions that we know are going to be wrong? What is that? I have an answer. I think it's because we would prefer to predict the future and to be wrong than to admit, I have no clue what's going to happen. Because the reality is, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But it's so uncomfortable to go there until we actually embrace it. And then it's so liberating.
And also, it also becomes a conversation piece. So making predictions and speculating on things and the flu and the presidential, you know, whatever, what was it? Tuesday, it was like, what day was it? What, you know, there's so much going on, but I also think that we just like to talk and we like other people, you know, misery loves company. So my rule is I don't listen to sad news. I don't want to hear the latest sad thing that happened, even locally, like forget about the world. Let's not even start there. And it's because I don't want my mind to start spiraling down to this rabbit hole of sadness and anxiety. So I choose not to engage in those conversations. Is that a good tactic or a bad tactic?
I think you need to know yourself. And it sounds like you have that line in your life for a good reason. You seem really resolved about it and clear. And you're right. I mean, we're bombarded by media. You know, you could be about to go to bed and then you pick up your phone and then all of a sudden you're like rattled for an hour and then it throws off the next 3 days because you lost 2 hours of sleep. It happens all the time, all the time. So I hear the line that you're taking and you're drawing in the sand and you're not crossing it. And like, I respect that fully. I do think there is some value to embracing the lack of control that we have over the world and understanding that there are limits and sometimes things happen that are upsetting, you know, sad, challenging. And trying to make peace with the limits of our humanity. And I don't know if we do that enough in general, but there are a couple ways to tackle that issue. It doesn't have to be with, watching whatever's upsetting on the news.
Well, Dr. Ross Marin, I can't thank you enough for joining me. I really respect and love and will utilize the spiritual component of, you know, getting myself closer to my spirituality through my anxiety. I really appreciate that angle and I will encourage everybody to do the same thing. But I also encourage everyone to get a copy of your book, so Thriving with Anxiety. How and where can they do that? And how can people learn more about you and what you do?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. My website is drrossmarin, rossmarin.com. There's actually a free giveaway. There's a 15-page guide based on the book, which people can sign up for and get and download a full-color PDF, which I think has a summary of all 9 tools, or maybe it's only 5 of them. I'm not remembering.
No, it's 9.
It is 9. No, I know in my book there are 9, but I don't know what's on the website. But either way, it's a nice package. And the book is available wherever books are sold. Amazon's probably the easiest place to get it, Barnes & Noble. What do we have up in Canada again? What's that bookstore?
Indigo.
Taking me back to when I grew up there in Toronto. Thank you very much.
No problem. And you can always find me on Instagram at Claudia_Macchiella or my website, claudiamacchiella.com. That's my show for this week. If you missed any part of it, go to 1059theregion.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and of course, Audible. I'm Dr. Claudia. Thank you for listening. And I hope this helps you live your best life.
The Wellness Prescription was brought to you by Healthy Planet. Order online at healthyplanetcanada.com or go online to find a location nearest you.